you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. If this is your first time with us, let me explain what you're about to hear, because the Twilight Histories is probably a little different than anything you've heard before. The show casts you as the main character, just as you would play the hero in a game. And in fact, we have started building the Twilight Histories into a role-playing game, which we're beta testing right now. More on that later. The Twilight Histories takes place in a dystopian, war-ravaged future. It's the type of future where you eat boiled cabbage, but you're surrounded by incredibly high-tech gadgets, the whispers of a lost golden age. You're looking for escape from your dreary world, and the Twilight Histories is pure escape. Literally. They've developed a way to split through the multiverse, allowing tourists like yourself to pass into different worlds. So, put on your headphones, step on the platform, and get ready for an adventure of a lifetime. This is The Black Scourge, Part 1.
Welcome back, and welcome to your first journey as an official Twilight Histories agent. It's an exciting job, probably one of the most exciting you'll find. There's really nothing like it. We have exoplanet tour guides join us because what we offer is simply more interesting than space travel. There's so much more variety in splitting worlds than you can find, hopping around from one dead planet to the next. And I should mention about that little mishap involving you being stuck in ancient Greece for so long. That shouldn't happen again. It was a terrorist attack that damaged our leased Urumqi accelerator. This Swiss facility is what we have to settle for. It's a little older, perhaps, but it will have to do until our landlord gets our old accelerator back up and running. Now, about your job. I'm sure HR briefed you, but let's go through the basics. There are a number of different tasks or missions agents do for us, and you'll get to all of them in time. You'll set up things for tourists, gather data for researchers. Sometimes you'll act as a guide. But your first assignment is perhaps one of the most interesting, if not the most labor-intensive. You're going to explore a brand new world. This is how we always start our new agents. We've sent a drone to an unexplored world and have some topographical images. Here, have a look at these. We believe this world roughly corresponds to our own late medieval or early Renaissance period, so around the 14th or 15th century. What really piqued our interest is that you can see cities dotted around the east coast of North America. But at the same time, you can also see cities in Europe that have been destroyed. Constantinople, Rome, Paris. Whatever happened, it was extensive. We want to know everything we can about this world. When was the point of divergence? Who were the major players? What's different? Once we know something about this world, our sales team can pitch it, and maybe we can turn it into a destination. You'll get a bonus if you bring us back something good. So, let's get you suited up. Your costume hangs on those hooks. Because this world is probably a medieval variant, we're going to give you some very generic medieval clothes. It's probably a good idea to change them the first chance you get, and you know, get creative. Raid a clothesline. You're going to land in North America, near one of these cities on the coast. You'll start here, at this point in Florida. once you get a feel for your environment, start moving north. Be Marco Polo. Find the most interesting places. You'll have around 3 years, give or take, so wear out some shoes. Well, you look great. I love the cap and the pointy shoes. I can almost hear the hurdy-gurdy. Don't forget your walking stick. You're going to need it. Now, step onto the platform, and let's get you on your way. As you know, you're going to feel dizzy, and you might not remember where you are at first. You know the routine. It'll all come back soon enough. Now, I know this is your first job with us, so if I can give you a piece of advice, don't get complacent. We've sent agents to explore worlds, and they've ended up camping out in one spot the whole time. It's easy to stay in one place. You can get a job, you get a clean, dry place to stay, make some friends. It can really be hard to keep moving. But your job is to explore. And if you want to keep working for us, you have to explore as much as possible. This is your trial period. So move, 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 and find us something good. A bug bites your arm. You slap it. The slight pain jars you into consciousness. It's dark. You're walking through warm water. How long you've been walking, you don't know. It gurgles and sloshes around your knees, and your feet suck into mud. There are reeds. There are dark shapes of trees with trunks rising from the water, their alien roots splayed like multi-pronged fiber-optic cables. The air is hot and muggy, tropical. There are sounds of chirping insects. You see what you imagine to be fireflies dancing among the trees. You look up. Between the tree canopy is a sky full of stars. A sickening dread rises from your stomach. Your heart races. Are you on the alien planet? The one where you were marooned for so long? Is the robot here? A mosquito buzzes around your ear. The sound is familiar, earthly. You relax a little and wait for the rush of endorphins charging through your heart to melt away. No, this is not that alien planet. You are not marooned on an alien world. But it is a different world. Florida, you say to yourself. The word catches in your throat. Memories of walking through the swamp trickle back. Hours of walking, mindless, unconscious walking. Walking in a dream. But where are you exactly? There's nothing but swamp trees and the chirping of insects. Chirping, and something else. Drums, music? Is this also part of the dream? You shake your head. You slap your cheek, trying to force clarity from the fog. Music. Yes, it's still there. Very light over the sounds of insects, but it's definitely music. There's a rhythmic beat and chords roll over each other. There, laughing. A whoop. You slosh through the reeds in the direction of the sound. A warm glow silhouettes the trees. The music is louder, the laughter clear and audible. The water is deeper here and colder, and it laps in small wavelets around your waist. You climb the side of the bank. The ground is hard to navigate with its maze of roots and vines and palm fronds. You press through towards the light. The trees give way to a large clearing where shrubs grow in rows. There's a small bonfire in the center of the clearing, and people are dancing and singing around it. Some have instruments. There are maybe 20 or 30 of them. The men with thick beards, the women with long, uncombed hair. They're all dressed in simple leather or cotton outfits. You debate going in. Is it safe? How would they react to a stranger materializing from the swamp at night? You have to get your story straight. What is your story? What could possibly explain how you got to this remote part of the world? Are you a trader? You don't have anything to trade. And how would you have gotten here anyways? Maybe you could say you were shipwrecked. But where are you from? Don't know the names of any places in this world. The topographical maps you were shown back at the Twilight Histories were aerial photos and didn't have any place names. One of the dancers raises his head back and howls. Another dancer shoulders him in the chest and they both fall to the ground, laughing. They beat each other with fists even as they laugh. Everyone seems to be laughing. At what? You can't tell. Are they drunk? You don't see any cups or jugs lying around. But what strange behavior. It's as though they're in some sort of manic state. Something metallic glints against the firelight. You squint your eyes. Weapons. You see armor and swords and axes lying in a heap. Long spears support each other in the shape of a teepee. No, you won't be going into this den of insanity tonight. You'll lie here and watch. Maybe tomorrow you'll venture in. You pull away from the clearing and are consumed by the night. It's morning, and you rise to the smell of smoke brought in by a gust of wind. From the edge of the clearing, you see the bonfire smoldering. A few of the people have stirred and move around in slow, painful strides. The rest lie asleep between the rows of shrubs. A woman near the smoking heap takes a leaf from the ground and crams it in her mouth. She chews it like a goat. You take a deep breath and step into the clearing. "Excuse me," you say, choosing to speak in old English. Your hands raise in a gesture of peace. Those who are awake jump to attention. They stumble back.
"Whoa there! I come in peace. I'm a traveler, and I'm new to this land. I've been walking for many days, and I'm lost. Could you tell me where I can find a town?"
One of the men rises. He's a great-sized man with a long red beard. His eyes squint with hostility.
"How did you find us?" he says.
The words aren't old English, but something similar. You aren't sure the name of the language, but at least your chip can translate it.
"I was walking through the swamp," you say, matching his language. "I was trying to get to a town and saw smoke rising over the canopy. I followed the smoke here."
"Who are you?"
I'm a traveler, as I said. Is there a town or a city nearby?"
The man with the red beard picks up a double-headed axe and kicks one of the sleeping men awake.
"Where are you from?"
The old land. There's no need to raise your weapon. I'm unarmed.
Where?
As I said, I'm from the old land, on the other side of the sea.
And what is your business here?
I'm a traveler. Could you please just tell me where the town is? I don't want any trouble.
He seems to weigh his axe. He reaches down and picks up a leaf and holds it before you. It's shaped like a small spear point, and it flutters in the wind.
Do you know what this is?
A leaf, you say. The man cracks a smile.
What kind of leaf?
You look around. It does seem as though the people have purposely cultivated these shrubs and are now harvesting their leaves. There are piles of them, and it looks like they're in the process of packing them into sacks.
I don't know. I don't know what kind of leaves they are.
Do you know Eric the Bastard?
No.
Are you one of his spies?
No, I don't know who Eric the Bastard is. I'm a traveler.
The man puts the leaf in his mouth and chews. After a moment, his eyes light up as though electrically charged.
You stumbled into the wrong place, he says.
The man takes you down a narrow trail. Three other stout-looking men follow, all armed with axes, swords, and spears. They refuse to talk and eye you with suspicion. They all chew the strange leaf, which you suspect is some sort of stimulant. You arrive at what looks like a fort. A palisade wall is built of crooked, squat timbers, obviously sourced from the strange, bulbous trees that grow in the swamp. The fort caps the high ground of a small island in the delta, and beyond it you can see the open ocean, its waves crashing in the wind that boxes your ears. There are men and women everywhere on the island. Some are digging a moat around the fort. Others practice fighting with wooden weapons. A group press against a cart filled with sacks similar to the ones you saw in the clearing. The wind picks up some of the mysterious spear-shaped leaves and tosses them through the air. You catch one as it passes and put it to your lips. You feel nothing. You chew on it. A moment later, you feel a slight jolt of energy. Your military-grade blood is immune to most drugs, and the effect is slight, hardly perceptible. But you can imagine it would be quite intense for those with regular blood. Your guards take you through a gate in the wall. Armed men approach you with questioning eyes. A slender man with a long blonde mustache and sad blue eyes steps forward. "Who is he?" he says to the large man with the red beard.
We don't know.
Well, what do you know?
The stranger claims to be a traveler looking for a town, but ended up in our coca fields.
The blonde mustached man with the blue eyes turns towards you. What were you doing in our coca field? Who are you? Do you work for Eric the Bastard?
I keep telling your friend I'm a traveler. I was looking for this town and accidentally wandered into your, field. I saw the smoke rising through the air and mistook it for your town.
The slender blonde man turns to the larger man. What were you doing with a fire? You gave us away.
He lies.
I smell it on you. Smoke. How big was your fire?
It was not big, just a cooking fire.
It was big enough for a traveler to think it was a town. He runs his hands through his blonde hair in exasperation.
Gunnar, how could you be so stupid?
You know the risks. You're a great warrior, but a half-wit. The red-bearded man called Gunnar grumbles and scowls. His knuckles are white against his axe.
Never mind. Just promise me you won't do it again. It was your idea to grow the coca leaves. Now keep them secret.
What are you going to do to me? You say.
He turns to you. They all turn to you. The mustached man draws a deep breath. He looks like he's about to say something, then stops as though he had a change of heart.
Tell me why I shouldn't kill you.
You swallow hard. Your mind swirls with endorphins, muddying your concentration.
I have news.
What news?
News from the old world.
The men look at each other. Go on.
You try to recall the aerial maps your guide showed you back at the Twilight Histories. All the major cities of Europe were burned wrecks, all except those in the far north, up in Norway and Scandinavia.
The enemy is moving on our homeland. They're attacking our cities.
All the men around you gasp.
Hedeby, the blonde man says. You don't recognize the name.
Yes, Hedeby is under siege. They need men, fighting men, to defend it. That's why I'm here. I'm trying to round up men to rescue our homeland.
You're from back home?
Yes. If you love Hedeby, please send men, even if it's only a few.
The blonde man's shoulders drop and he looks down. He paces and rubs his chin.
I don't have men to spare. We have problems of our own. But
are you hungry? Gunnar, get some food and wine. We'll hear about home.
Welcome to Muspel.
The houses you pass are made of timber with thatched roofs of swamp reeds, the gables crossing at the top. They certainly look Viking, if indeed that's what these people are. You wish you knew where Hedeby was, as that would solve the mystery once and for all. The people don't wear furs like you imagine Vikings would, but loose, flowing garments that must allow more airflow in this tropical heat. And they seem strangely energetic. Many of them are chewing on what you assume are coca leaves.
You sure you're not one of Eric the Bastard's spies?
Gunnar says over the wind. He puts another leaf in his mouth. Who is Eric the Bastard?
Gunnar spits. He's the Aztec's devil, and I'll cleave his head in two if I see him.
The Aztecs, you say. You shiver at the thought. You remember climbing their temple stairs with Captain Jorez. You were only moments away from being their sacrifice. It was a lifetime ago, yet the memory is fresh.
He sold out his own people to become the Aztec's devil. He's a bastard, that Eric. He wasn't born a bastard, but he is one. Which is why he's earned the name.
A large gust of wind nearly knocks you over.
Curse the wind, Gunnar says. Storm's brewing. You're not from around here. You're in for a treat.
Wait, what did you say about this Eric? He's the Aztec's devil? What do you mean?
He's mad, that Eric.
Gunnar grumbles something to himself. You change the subject. Who's your friend? The man with the blonde hair, you say.
Oh, that's Hadwin, he says.
There's no warmth in his voice.
He rules here. We rule together.
You rule together? How's that going? Gunnar is about to reply, but is interrupted by the furious ringing of a bell.
Ship!
comes a voice from a tower.
Gunnar breathes hard. Come on, he says.
There's a ship on the horizon, a black ship. Your bionic eyes magnify it. It looks like a Viking longboat with a high dragon's head at its bow and what looks like human skulls hanging around the sides. But it's also in trouble. The waves crash against it. The sail is in tatters. Oars are desperately maneuvering the ship around the churning squall. Up and down it goes, waves smashing over the sides. Yet the ship never goes under. It presses on towards the shore. It seems as though the entire town has come out to see the ship beach. Everyone carries a weapon. Men jump out of the ship and help guide it up on the grassy beach. You're surprised not to see Vikings, but Aztecs leap into the water on springy, muscular legs. They're wearing chainmail, and they carry the heavy iron axes of a Viking warrior slung over their backs. Gunnar spits into the sand. A man appears from the side of the ship. He wears a heavy cloak to protect him against the wind, though you can make out his face, which is certainly Viking. He has a long beard like Gunnar's, feathers braided in his hair. He doesn't disembark, but calls down, his voice weak against the wind.
I bring tidings from our Lord Quetzalcoatl, and a stern warning.
Hadwin steps forward.
Cut the crap, Ivar. Is that you? What do you want?
Lord Quetzalcoatl knows you have disobeyed him. You have harvested the sacred plant. He commands you to bring your harvest to me at once so that I may ferry it back to him.
Yeah, or what? Hadwin says.
If you fail to bring the sacred plant at once to this ship, your town will be destroyed and everyone killed by the Quetzalcoatl's invincible armies, which are even now sailing here.
In this storm, piss off, Ivar. You can take that message back to Eric the Bastard.
Gunnar steps forward.
Ivar, we're running the coca trade now. There's plenty of room for both of us to run it, and no need for blows, though we'll fight if we have to.
Then you refuse to bring your harvest to me?
Listen, Ivar, we don't have much of the plant. We won't cut into your trade much. We'll find a way to work together. If you will not bring me your harvest, then doom will follow. So says the Lord Quetzalcoatl. Ivar, how can you speak that way to me? We're cousins.
But Ivar is gone. The Aztecs push the longboat back into the raging sea, then leap into the ship to man their oars.
You have brought doom upon us, Hadwin says to Gunnar. I should never have let you groan those cursed shrubs.
Tell me about Hedeby. How bad are things? Hadwin says, removing his hood to reveal his long blonde hair. He sits next to you and pours a cup of wine, downing it in one gulp. The great room creaks and groans under the howling wind, and the fire flickers as though straining to stay alight. The Vikings look up at the ceiling beams.
Oh, well, it's... I haven't actually been to Hedeby myself, but I spoke with refugees.
Refugees?
Yes, what I mean is that there are people fleeing the countryside.
Oh, so the city has not been sacked?
No, not that I know of.
And you're not from Hedeby?
No.
Then where are you from?
A small island in the north. It doesn't matter. But listen, I'm here to ask for help.
Who sent you?
No one. It was my idea to come here.
Hadwin scowls, and then brushes it off. I'm disappointed. I was hoping to hear about home. But you say it's under siege. How long ago did you last hear news?
Let me see. It must have been 60 days ago.
How bad is the siege? Is the city well fortified? How long can it last?
The raid comes and goes, so I hear.
Raid? I thought you said it was under siege. The questions are becoming difficult to answer. You need to broaden things out and turn the questioning around.
I spoke with people fleeing from the area, so I can't say for certain, but I do know the old world is in trouble. All the great cities of the south have been sacked. Rome, Constantinople, Paris. No city is safe.
Yes, I know these things. The Black Scourge. We came here to escape that fate.
And to make us all rich, don't forget, Gunnar says, interrupting.
He's chewing on a leaf. Hadwin glares at him. Yes, we will be rich. Or dead.
If it's not my place to ask, please tell me, but who was that man in the ship? You called him Ivar. He's a Viking like you.
Ivar is Gunnar's cousin, but he's dead to us now. He's a stooge of the bastard Eric.
He mentioned something about the Quetzalcoatl. Isn't that the god of the Aztecs?
Yes, the Quetzalcoatl. It's some kind of jungle serpent devil. They think Eric is their devil god, and he's happy enough to play the part.
How did that happen?
You want to know the story? Very well. We left Hedeby for Midgard some years ago to find new homes. Eric was part of our band then. We all went down the coast of Midgard and stopped at each city. We debated joining each one of them, but we were determined to start our own. Finally, we came to this place. To many of us, it seemed good. The jungles have delicious fruits in great quantity, and the sun is always warm. However, not everyone wanted to stay. Eric wanted to keep going. We couldn't agree, and after many heated arguments, Eric left along with a ship of men. We thought we'd seen the last of him, but a year later he returned dressed in feathers. The natives of some southern jungle people believed he was their god. He tried to get us to join him. He said the Aztecs had a great city and much gold, but we weren't interested. We didn't want to wear feathers and join some strange religion. We wanted to be our own people, true to ourselves. And what about the coca leaves? Where did they come in? The coca leaves. I guess Eric discovered them down there and thought he would sell them for profit. He tested this strategy with us. He sent us a package of coca. Many people were under the leaf's spell. It was all they would talk about. The next time Eric returned, he demanded gold if we wanted more. We don't have gold, of course. We're a poor people. Everyone gave what little they could, all their small treasures, which they had brought from home. I guess it was a success for Eric, for soon we saw ships sail past Muspel. Ships going north to the land of Midgard were laden with coca leaves. Those coming back were heaped with the comforts of home.
we came into some luck, or maybe it was luck. You'd have to ask Gunnar. Eric sent us another package to try and squeeze more out of us. Among one of the packages was a sapling of a coca plant. Gunnar tended it. He hid it so no one would see. When it went to seed, he planted more. Within 3 years, he had a small field, the very field you stumbled upon. Although I have protested against it, Gunnar insisted we sell the leaves to the northern cities of Midgar, just as Eric the Bastard does. Last year, we sent our first ship north with coca leaves. It returned with clothes, weapons, good food, kitchen utensils, all the things we were desperate for. It was the first time since we arrived at this swamp that we celebrated. But then Eric the Bastard came. He heard about our trade and told us to give us our crops. We were surprised he was acting with such hostility towards us. But maybe we shouldn't have been. He spent many years playing the part of a devil god among the Aztecs. It must have bent his mind and filled it with devil magic. At any rate, we refused to give him our crops. He said he'd return and take them by force. That was last year. We hadn't heard from him since. Now his stooge Ivar has appeared, saying Eric's going to kill us. He's your cousin. What do you think of that, Gunnar? Gunnar gives a fast, staccato laugh that could only come from heavy chewing.
I don't think much of it, Hadwin. Let them come. Aztecs against Vikings. I'd like to see that.
How many of you are there in Muspel, you say?
300, Gunnar says. 300 men and women able to carry an axe, if that's what you mean.
That's it? Hadwin, Gunnar, come close. Closer so others won't hear. Listen, I don't think you know what you're up against. The wind rages against the great hall, and the beams groan under the strain. A swamp lock in the fire explodes in a shower of sparks.
Hi, this is Jordan Harbour. I've chatted with listeners who are struggling with COVID, and I mean really struggling. They're sick, or their family is sick. These listeners have told me it's like a marathon. It just keeps going and going. Some say it's hell. And then there are others who tell me their struggle is that they lost their job and they don't know what to do. Others have jobs, but they're on the front line and they're scared. Some people tell me they're lonely. Others tell me they're mad. I've had a number of people tell me the Twilight Histories is their favorite escape, the little spark of joy that takes them out of this world and puts them in another. There are so many different experiences and ways of viewing the pandemic, but the one thing you could say unites us all is that we don't like it. We're tired of the masks and the sickness and the restrictions and the stress and the loss. I've heard it from listeners, and I feel it too. This is a marathon. But like all marathons, though they feel like they go on forever, and you wonder if you'll ever get to the end of it, at some point you round the corner and there it is. The Twilight Histories has been going through its own challenges. The creators and I have been pouring ourselves into the show. We've built a new podcast called The Twilight Histories Extra, where fans can contribute their own shows. Josh Hutchins has written a Twilight Histories book, The Romano-Saxon War, which is up on Amazon. We just launched a store with some awesome t-shirts. And we're building a role-playing game out of the show, with character sheets and rules and everything you need to create your own Twilight Histories adventures and play with your friends. Despite this, the Twilight Histories has been treading water lately. I'm not canceling any of our plans, but I have had to scale things back a little bit. What I've realized is that we need to get back to basics, and that means more stories on the podcast, and more stories for our patrons. Over the next 4 months or so, I'm going to be releasing a steady stream of shows on the podcast, one each week. All through this timeline, our team is going to be pumping out stories in our Patreon area. On top of this, I'm also posting in our Patreon area sessions from our very first Twilight Histories role-playing game. And I'm not talking about raw recordings I just drag and drop into the feed. I'm actually treating these like I would any other Twilight History show. I'm putting in hours of editing and producing so that I can create the highest quality possible. The multi-part adventure that we're working on right now is called Pro Patria, and it takes place in a world where Rome has magic. Incidentally, I'm playing the role of a very grumpy bard who thinks hot crust buns is a work of genius. I know we're in tough times. We're all struggling. I also know for some of you that Twilight Histories is the escape that makes the pandemic at least bearable for the short term. So I'm asking you, please consider supporting the Twilight Histories by becoming a patron so we can keep going. Help us keep creating shows that transport you to a different world. And if you're stuck at home, come and join or start a Twilight Histories role-playing game as one of our beta testers. You can do all that by visiting our website at twilighthistories.com. That's again, twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. And until next time, take care.